I'm Kate Remington, and my guest in the studio today is guitarist Brad Rau, and I'm really excited because you're going to be presenting a wonderful recital of a lot of really diverse music for guitar. So welcome.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. It's great to be here.
It's fantastic that you made the trip because you're based in Philadelphia.
Yes.
And so Fairfield County is kind of a new experience, and yet, you know, music is so universal, and I really appreciate the fact that you've put together such an incredibly diverse playlist for today. Everything from the classics by Villa-Lobos, but also some Dave Brubeck. And
yeah.
So how did you decide what you were going to play on the program?
Well, I perform a lot of music. I have many, many hours of music performed. And really what's been happening is a lot of my teachers have been getting on my case to get, like, have 1 hour of really solid music. And I'm like, I have too much. But slowly, you know, the cream is rising to the top. So right now, these are, you know, some of my most strongest pieces. And I also think some of the most interesting and unique, and, you know, also trying to get a variety of tempos, a variety of styles, a varieties of countries.
Mm-hmm.
So that was all of that kind of went into picking, you know, weeding down the pieces I play to what I have for you right now.
Well, what's so cool is in the 20th century and then in the now times, the guitar has really kind of become an incredible, you know, virtuosic instrument. It's not just an afterthought like it was in the 19th century. And so you've got some really iconic pieces from those 20th century composers like Villa-Lobos, but then you're also really pushing the envelope with some contemporary pieces too, which is cool. So what would you like to play first?
So the first piece I'm going to play is a piece by a guy named Villa-Lobos, and this is a piece called Prelude No. 1. One of the more beautiful pieces that I think he wrote. So I'm very excited to play this.
Great.
All right. Thank you.
That was so lovely. Thank you.
Thank you.
There's such a delicacy to it, and you can really hear how much Villa-Lobos was influenced by Bach because of all of the just the delicate little inner voices. And
oh, everything. Absolutely. Yeah. One of the preludes he actually dedicated to Bach, I think it was Prelude 4.
Yeah.
So absolutely. Yeah. That was it's weird playing a piece like this when it's so lit up.
Yeah, I expect it to be sort of in a dark and smoky place.
Yeah, so I'm trying to mentally put myself there.
Well, you did a wonderful job with because there's such an intimacy to it.
Right.
To that piece, and it's like you're just playing it for yourself, which is just very, very cool. You studied with Elliot Fisk.
Yes.
Who was one of Segovia's last students.
Absolutely.
Which is very cool because it's like one degree of separation. Right?
Yes.
So what sort of meaningful things did you learn from Elliot that he learned from Segovia? How long do we have, right?
I mean, that's Elliot is such an amazing person that I don't have enough time to say. I'd like to say that he speaks 7 languages fluently.
Wow.
There was one time where he told me to read the first chapter of Dante's Inferno and call him at 9 o'clock. and I am, into that kind of philosophy stuff, so it was very relevant for me. And he was able to tie, my music career with some of this kind of stuff. The thing that makes Elliot most unique, especially today, is his positive attitude, almost a sickening positive attitude towards anything, where no matter how much negative energy you throw him, I've had so many lessons where I was like, I'm never gonna, here's all the reasons why it's never gonna work. And by the end of it, I'm so, excited about getting my career. And there's so, in today, it seems like today in music, it's such a cutthroat, backstabbing, stepping over people, that to have Elliot, who's such a successful musician and a role model for me as someone who's a positive, supporting person and not someone who's a conniving, which seems to sort of be the direction that it goes in. So that's what I think is most unique about Elliot, is just his positive approach to music, which just today seems so unique.
Yeah, that's fascinating. I kind of expected you to say, oh, well, Segovia told him this and this and this, but to come at it from such a wonderful perspective, because music doesn't exist in a vacuum. And
right.
So you get influenced by all the other things that
absolutely
are going on that you're interested in. And so that's very cool.
Yes.
So what have you got next for us?
So the next piece, I'm going to jazz it up a little bit here. I'm very excited to play Take 5 by Paul Desmond, who was the saxophone player of the Dave Brubeck Band. So when I was a teenager, I was a really big fan of the country guitar player Chet Atkins.
Oh, yeah.
Who did sort of a country jazz, whatever he mixed together. and so when I heard his version of Take 5, I've always loved the song Take 5.
Yeah.
And starting out as a drummer, I've always liked, oh, a song in 5? which excites me. So the Take 5, for people who aren't a musician, it's a 5 beat, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. 1, 2, which is as opposed to the normal 4, mm-hmm, than most rock songs. So it's a pretty unique kind of style. I also get excited to play Take 5 because this is one of the few opportunities where I get to improvise.
Oh, cool.
And that's always exciting.
Yeah, neat.
Okay. I'm going to tune up real quick again. Thank you.
was so fun. I think it's really a testament to how amazingly that song was written by Paul Desmond, because it sounds good no matter what instrument it's played on, and whether it's a solo or the Rubik Quartet.
Right.
So, yeah.
Absolutely. I also realized the theme he uses, is actually the same theme from the beginning part, too.
Right,
so it's just really cool that, and it flows. It doesn't even sound like it's in five.
Lot of times when you have something that has too many beats for a measure, it sounds a little off balance.
Right.
But this is just so well written.
Absolutely. You would never know unless someone told you. Almost.
Secret five. That's great. And your arrangement of it is fantastic.
Thank you.
It keeps the integrity of the original piece, and yet it sounds really fresh and new. So.
Thank you.
Well, that's very cool. I was curious about your guitar because it's got such a beautiful sound. Is it custom made?
This is a custom guitar that I had made by a guy named William Henderson, who is retired now. So this guitar is number 48. There's only 52 of these in the world.
Wow.
So I'm a very, very lucky owner. He lives in Baltimore. So my dad, who is also a guitarist, and is starting his own amp building business, Maniac Amps. So he knows a lot about guitars, more on the blues side. So it was really cool to get to go to his shop and pick out all the different woods. And I'm also using Diodario High Tension Pro Arts with the bronze basses. The bronze basses is kind of my secret to getting the darker, rich tone. A lot of guitar players play silver basses. So it's a little too bright for me personally.
Mm-hmm. Well, especially with the pieces that you're sharing with us today, you do need that kind of low-end sound, which is really special and really unique. And it doesn't even have a hole in it like Willie Nelson's guitar.
Not yet.
Maybe eventually, right?
I'm working on it.
Well, you mentioned that you've put together this program with music from a lot of different places around the world.
Right. So. One of the things about classical guitar that I think a lot of people miss is just really how diverse it is.
Mm-hmm.
We're covering hundreds of years and many, many, many different countries. And it's weird that it's just like, oh, it's one style and it all sounds the same. But to me, if it is a style at all, it's one of the most diverse styles, next to jazz or rock, I think. So The Bells of Dawn is written by Sansa de la Manza.
Oh, wow.
Who is a South American composer. The unique thing about this piece is that it uses the classical guitar technique known as tremolo. And I wouldn't be allowed to do a classical guitar performance without tremolo. Basically, what I'm going to be doing is I'm going to be playing a note with my thumb, and then I'm going to play the same note three times in a row with my ring finger, my middle finger, and my index finger. And we get this 1, 2, 3, 4 kind of thing. And if you do it really fast, it creates the illusion of two different musicians, maybe a guitar player plucking a note and a mandolin player doing a tremolo, repeating a note very, very high on one of the notes. So I'm very excited. This piece, The Bells of Dawn, you can hear kind of the introduction. It sort of reminds you of morning bells. This is just my own opinion, too, but the piece goes into major, and that's when I decided the sun rises.
Oh, wow.
That's my own interpretation. But please enjoy The Bells of Dawn by Sansa de la Manza.
That is just beautiful.
Thank you.
I've never heard that before. And what I love about it is it really sounds like it's coming from a long way away. There's a quietness to the tremolo, and it's like you're hearing these bells across a valley or something.
Yeah.
It's a fascinating piece.
Thank you. Absolutely. It was based off of a more famous piece called Recuerdos de la Alhambra,
which you
might have heard. Mm-hmm. It's pretty obvious that Sansa de la Manta copied Targa at least a little bit. But I think that's a much more unique. Has a little bit of a modern twist, and it's in Dorian. And I love Dorian. It's one of my favorite scales.
It's amazing how you don't really notice what's different about it, but when you hear a piece that's in one of these ancient modes, where it's kind of like a different organization of whole steps and half steps, basically. But it really gives a completely different quality to the music. So
absolutely.
How do you find these pieces?
Every piece I've learned, I've heard another classical guitar player play in my youth. And like that piece that I just learned was off of the very first classical guitar CD I ever owned.
Wow.
When I was about 15, I had a classical guitar CD, and that was it. There was no internet. There was nothing. And I listened to that CD many, many, many times.
Wow.
And that was one of the tracks on there. So it's actually really cool to now, as an adult, I guess I'm an adult, to be able to actually play that, you know, because as a kid, I thought about, I'm going to do that on the radio one day.
And here you are.
And here I am. So
that is so cool.
Yeah.
So what have you got next for us?
So the next piece is another piece by Villa-Lobos. It's called Etude 11. So Villa-Lobos wrote this etude that's now called Etude 1, and he sent it to Segovia. And basically Segovia was like, more please.
Wow.
So a couple months later, Villa-Lobos sent these 12 studies to Andrea Segovia, and they are still to this day some of the most famous studies for classical guitar. A lot of them are very technically demanding, and they're basically what I would call show-off pieces. Look at how fast my fingers can move. And this piece has a little bit of that, but this one, out of all the studies, to me, is one of the most beautiful pieces of music. And the reason that I play it, I'm not really into showing off my fingers as much as I want to try to connect emotionally. And I think this is one of the most emotionally rich pieces that Villa-Lobos wrote, or maybe even just in my repertoire at all.
Wow.
So I really think you're going to enjoy this Etude 11. Thank you.
Wow, you're right about how musical that is. And
right.
So etudes were really written just to help a performer deal with some kind of technical issue. And so I'm curious, can right. you tell with this one what
Well, yes, this is with? Absolutely the middle section where I'm doing a very fast arpeggio while simultaneously reaching a very, very difficult chord that I shift around, even going from the first fret to the fifth fret. Mm-hmm. Playing 16th notes, grabbing this chord really quick. And the rest of it is so beautiful that he tricks you. He's like, you want to play this beautiful piece? You're going to have to play that hard part in the middle. That's how I think that study works. And that's how I've always interpreted, because I've wanted to play this piece. There have been a number of years where I didn't perform it because I wasn't really able to get a handle on the middle section.
Yeah. Wow, that's fascinating.
Yeah. So that's and some of them I think are just... If you hear them, they're directly just hard, fast. That's, you know, and not to say that they're not emotional or they're not cleverly written, but mm-hmm. I think that one in particular, he was really like, let's try to make someone cry once or whatever.
So how do you approach something like that? It's sort of like a boss battle in a video game, and you know it's going to be hard. Do you break it down and slow it way down, or?
I don't even remember learning that piece, to be honest. It was, I might have learned that like 20 years ago at this
wow.
point. So I can't really recall even learning it at all. I mean, I'm sure it had to have happened at one point. But
well, like if you're helping
still,
a student with it, you
still get better. You know, I mean, there's a lot that I would work on with this piece still to this day. I mean, you're never done working
right.
on something. You know, I can play the notes somewhat successfully, but there's the dynamics, the tone. A lot of what I do with a piece like this is I try to decide the tones that I'm going to use. Mm-hmm. And this is something that I think Segovia was really strong with, that a lot of modern classical guitar players I think overlook, is the variety of tone and, to use his own word, the orchestration of the guitar.
Yeah.
It was Beethoven who said the guitar is a miniature orchestra.
Oh wow.
And I think that's absolutely the case. And so that, in addition to something else that I think Segovia is really good at, which is storytelling.
Mm-hmm.
When I play a piece, I try to tell a story. So that you might imagine, you know, pick a character, Mickey Mouse or SpongeBob, and I imagine like what would be happening to the character during this. You know, is he getting in a fight? Is he you know what I mean? Where is it? So I kind of think, because that's what I really think is important for music.
Mm-hmm.
Most people don't know all the music theory and stuff. You know, someone would hear something like this and say, oh, that's Egyptian.
Right.
You know, and a music major would say, oh, that's the fifth mode of harmonic minor. We're really saying the same thing. And what I try to do with music is have people connect to that, oh, that's Egyptian,
mm-hmm.
and try to get away from the mechanical,
kind of academic,
the academic yeah. aspect, which to me is not directly interesting.
Yeah.
It's indirectly interesting if you can make it into a story or make it into, you know, different tones and mm-hmm. different varieties. So,
yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
So, well, I can't wait to hear you share another thing. So
sure.
What have you got?
Okay. Yes. So the next piece is by my favorite composer on the planet, Johann Sebastian Bach. I could talk about him all day, and I'll spare
well,
you.
Well, he's sort of like the bedrock, like the foundation of like everything musical.
That's definitely true. And I think especially for classical guitar, he's one of the few composers that I can really get my hands around. And I can play arrangements of Mozart and arrangements of Beethoven or Debussy, but I can play Bach pretty close to what exactly
mm-hmm.
he wanted. Nobody, no notes are getting removed or octaves getting smushed. So I can really, you know, actually get inside his head, where as much as I'm a Beethoven fan, you can play Beethoven arrangements on guitar, but it's not, you're not having that direct connection with
yeah.
Beethoven. It's a secondhand whisper down the lane. So that's one of the many reasons I love about Bach. And the other thing is this piece in particular, every time I look at the piece, I see something new.
Wow.
Very much like a Monty Python.
Always the little things you miss.
So you keep coming back to Bach. It's always fresh. It still seems to be relevant today for people. So I'm going to play a prelude, which is a kind of an improvised. It's supposed to sound improvised. It obviously isn't improvised if it's Bach. And then I'm going to be playing a fugue where we're going to have a single theme that's going to be moved around in different keys and fragmented, and Bach is going to have a lot of fun playing with that.
So is this one of the well-tempered clavier preludes and fugues, or is it
I wish I had that many fingers. So this is originally from a cello suite. I believe it's cello suite 6, and then I'm not sure about that. And then Bach arranged it for lute, or maybe lute harpsichord, a lot of theorists say, because how come this is so hard to play on lute? The lute is very, very similar to the guitar. And when he wrote it on lute, he added an additional line of counterpoint. So I'm playing the cello line and then an additional bass line.
Wow.
So it would be... to say that this is an unaccompaniment suite would actually be no, there's an accompaniment. We added it later, or Bach added it. So another interesting thing about this piece is that it is in the French style.
Wow.
Bach is a German composer, but he was really, really big. You know, at the time, Bach was actually synthesizing the French and the German and Italian styles of music all into one. Some kind of fusion or something like that. We don't see Bach like that today.
Yeah.
You know, he seems very conservative, but actually he was very, you know, he had a very liberal approach to music back then. And I still think that, you know, somewhat shines in today. So, all right. So without further ado, this is the Prelude and Fugue by Bach, 995. Thank you.
those voices. I mean, it's just
yes,
following
three.
Them all. It's like this complicated labyrinth of.
yes, it is. Yeah.
Wow. If you're just joining me, my guest in the studio today is guitarist Brad Rau, and it's been so much fun to hear just the diverse collection of guitar music that you've brought
Thank
for us
you.
To listen to. It's really been fun. How did you first get interested in playing the guitar?
Well, as I was saying before, my dad is a blues guitar player, blues and classic rock. So I was always around guitar, my first instrument was actually the drums. So I was about 5 or 6 years old trying to play the drum set, and my dad, who, you know, would play with, I would be playing with my dad and his friends sometimes. They would let me sit in on a song or two.
Oh, cool.
So when I was 12, I started picking up guitar, and when I was 15, I saw a classical guitar player on one of those PBS stations, and I was absolutely blown away. And I tried to teach myself how to do it, and obviously that didn't work so well. And I ended up getting lessons. And you know, ever since I was 15, I wanted to be a classical guitar player. And I stuck with it, and here I am, still Jeez. Sticking with it.
Well, that takes a lot of dedication, especially when you're a teenager, because you've got so many other things you could be doing.
Absolutely, so. Especially the long nails in high school was a little awkward. but yeah, and there's been a lot of rough roads. There've been so many times where I've almost quit, or any, you know, everything was against me, but I found a way. There was a little tiny slither of hope. Wow. And it ended up turning out really well. So that was something that was really big for me, is to just keep pushing, you know, as no matter how hard it got or how impossible it seems.
Yeah, that's true with so many things. You tend to plateau as you're learning, and you think, well, I'm never going to get beyond this. I just can't get over this wall.
Right.
And so it must help, having gone through that yourself, when you're teaching your students, when they hit these rough patches.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, because I get excited for my students when they hit that. Because something I've realized, if you hit a plateau or a bottleneck, whatever you want to call it, you are on the verge of a breakthrough. If you push a little bit harder, 5, 10, a couple more days, depending on your scale length, you're going to have that breakthrough. What a lot of people do is they almost get to that breakthrough and they get frustrated and they stop. And if you can go 5, 10 minutes longer even, you can hit that breakthrough. And so that's what I do a lot of times with most of my lessons, is just coaching people and be like, well, just give it a try. Let's try it once and let's see what happens.
Wow.
And sometimes students are surprised. They'll tell me that they'll never be able to do that. And 3 minutes later, they're doing it just as well as me.
Wow.
And that's so exciting and so rewarding. And, you know, getting to prove to them, be like, you told me you couldn't do this in their face, you know.
Yeah,
like,
you see.
And it's really exciting for the kids to realize not only, yeah, now I can do this guitar move, whatever it is, but also that, like, I can do something that I didn't think I could do. And
yeah.
Then maybe I would like to think, hopefully, that would carry in, well, what other things I thought I couldn't do that maybe I actually can, that aren't actually that hard if I try for 2 seconds.
Yeah, oh, that's so cool. Well, you've got, like I said, a really diverse playlist for the program, for the, you know, our live broadcast. And so one of my favorite composers, and I think he's really underrated, is Antonio Lauro. He's
oh, yeah.
Under the radar.
Right. So. He's getting into the guitar community a little bit more. Yeah, absolutely. I love Antonio Lauro's combination of South American rhythms and jazz harmonies.
Yeah.
Those are two things that really excite me, and to have someone mixing together. These next Venezuelan waltzes I'm going to play are using an interesting technique that musicians call hemiola.
Oh, right.
Although basically, it's just basically saying 2 times 3 is 3 times 2.
Mm-hmm.
So if I'm going to have a group of 6 notes, I could group the note into 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, grouping it into a set of 3 notes grouped into 2. Or I could go 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6.
Mm-hmm.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Very similar to the Bulgarian rhythm of the flamenco. So those two rhythms fight with each other throughout this song. They go back and forth, or sometimes they happen both at the same time. So I think that makes these two pieces very, very exciting to play. So these are Venezuelan Waltzes 2 and 3 by Antonio Lauro.
Are wonderful. I love the sort of light and dark that they get, and the shift between major and minor, and then the rhythms. And
absolutely, so. Yeah. There's a lot going on. Yeah, those are short. Each one of those are one page, one's two page, but there's a lot going on in those in those pages.
Well, you know, there's just no substitute for a composer writing music for an instrument that he or she knows really, really well. And you can tell that Antonio Lauro just was, if not a guitarist, he just got inside it and really knew how to bring out its best qualities.
Absolutely, yeah. You couldn't write, you know. And that's one of the challenges of playing things like Debussy, is that it just, it's not what you would say idiomatic. It doesn't fit under the fingers. So even if you can play it, it sounds awkward because it is awkward, where Antonio Lauro has these equally beautiful melodies, but it fits a little bit naturally in the hands. I mean, there's some pretty intense stretches here in this piece, but for the most part, it's pretty playable music for the guitar.
Yeah, and you've brought a piece by Erik Satie that you're going to share with us, the first of the Ginopédie, and that's one of those that was originally for solo piano, and there's so much you can do with the pedals and getting those layers of sound with the piano. So how do you replicate that with the guitar?
I'll tell you what, if you haven't heard Satie on the guitar, you haven't heard Satie.
Really?
I can do vibrato and sustain and all kinds of other things, and I can control the tone, and I'm not saying that there's anything wrong with the piano, but I think the impressionistic style of Satie, really, I believe, fits a much better on the guitar than it does on the piano, just in terms of the, you know, the tone and the, you know, the vibrato, and you can really capture a mood. I haven't played it on piano, so I can't compare, but I just really find that you know, the guitar is itself, with the tone, colors, and the storytelling, a very much impressionistic instrument anyway.
Yeah.
You know, if I'm talking about orchestration, I'm really doing an impression of an orchestra.
Right.
In a more literal sense. So playing Erik Satie's impressionistic style music on guitar is absolutely, you know, it works really well. And the pieces themselves are they're a little slow and they're not that physically demanding. So it's something that I can really, you know, I can really capture Erik Satie, you know, intentions, I think, very, very accurately.
Yeah, well, now I'm really looking forward to hearing it. Right. That was wonderful. And yeah, you're true to the spirit of it and the sound of the original piano version, and yet the sustain that you got with it was really, really great.
Thank you.
So, yeah. Was that your own arrangement?
That was not mine, no.
Yeah.
I couldn't tell you off the top of my head.
But it must be hard to sort of winnow it down, because the guitar, you know, it's kind of like the piano. You've got centuries of music you could play. And
right.
So it must be kind of fun to be able to, you know, really go off the beaten path and track stuff down. And
so, absolutely, yeah. Yeah, but I think Eric Satie really does work well on guitar, and a lot of his other pieces also you know, fit equally well.
Yeah. Well, you're based in the Philadelphia area, but do you have any concerts coming up in the immediate future?
I perform about twice a week.
Wow.
And if you go to my website, bradraumusic.com, you can see all of my concerts for this year, and I have a number of dates booked for next year already.
Mm-hmm.
So there's plenty of, not really around here, but I do plenty of performing. I'd love to come back maybe to this area again. I'm planning a trip to Boston, so I might be able to stop by.
Yeah, that'd be great. I mean, for one thing, it'd be great if you could stop back here again.
Absolutely,
for another concert,
yes.
For sure. And I know you've got some YouTube videos, too, so people can
yes,
see you.
And I'm on Spotify. Actually, the next piece that I'm going to play is off of my new album called Guitar Night.
Oh, cool.
That is available Spotify, Amazon, and, you know, I'm on all the things like everyone else.
But that's great. I mean, it's. I love that there are so many different ways you can hear new music these days.
Absolutely, yes.
Yeah. So, yeah, because this next piece isn't one that I know well at all, this dance.
So Jorge Morel is another South American-style musician. He currently lives in New York, but he is very, very South American-sounding and looking. and this is another piece that, again, has the South American rhythms and the jazz harmonies. This one is actually very, very jazzy. A lot of jazz chords, a lot of 2-5-1 for people who know what that is. So it's really cool to see all the influences. And when I heard this piece, I knew right away that I had to learn it.
Wow.
So this is Danza in E minor by Jorge Morel. Thank you.
That was just an incredible piece.
Yeah, and right? Now yeah. You know about Jorge Morel. He's got plenty of stuff, a lot like that, that's really great music. I'm trying to bring some more of it into my repertoire every day.
That's amazing. I will definitely track that down. How difficult or how easy is it to get the music from the composers when you've heard a piece that you really want to add to your repertoire?
Nowadays, it is not that hard. I actually got that music when I was a student at Westchester University. We would always take a trip to the Baltimore Guitar Society. Mm-hmm. And this one, I can't remember the guy's name, but he had a little guitar shop in his basement where he had sheet music and he had guitars. And the one year, everybody thought I was crazy because I brought $200 and I bought $200 of music.
Wow.
which is nothing compared to what I have now. That was a great source. I think that's actually where I got that book was, and this was before Amazon or the internet was there, but it was really new.
Yeah.
So you didn't have, you know, but nowadays I can find anything.
Wow.
I can find anything. I might have to look for 10 minutes, you know, some things, you know, a piece like Jorge Morel, actually, it's not really hard to find his music. His music is published. I think it was even Hal Leonard who published, so his music is very available. But even some of the more obscure music, there's so many things that are available. Even now, what I've been doing is getting different arrangements of the same piece of music. So,
oh, wow.
For example, I've played the Segovia's version of the Bach Chaconne for many, many years,
mm-hmm.
and now I'm learning Manuel Barrueco's transcription and fingering, and hopefully I can make some kind of combination of the two where I can take the best of both of the ideas. And it's amazing to see the different approaches. So this is one thing where I have, you know, multiple versions of the Chaconne I'm learning, and then a lot of other, you know, especially with Bach, I have sometimes like four or five different transcriptions from famous artists that I get to work with and take the best of all their ideas and
sort of crowdsource it.
Yeah, and stand on the shoulder of giants, and maybe I make my own arrangement and it keeps going or something.
Yeah, that's so cool. And you've studied with Jason Vio too.
Yes, right? Yes. That was an amazing thing too. And the best part about studying with Elliot and Jason Vio, if you've heard them at all, they're very opposite players.
Mm-hmm.
Their personalities are very different. So to have the two approaches that I can combine, and I've actually literally combined the learning techniques that they've done, but also what I try to do is the results, where if I can get Jason's very precise, finely placed details with some of Elliot's, you know, extravagant emotional energy that he brings to the music. So I really think that's exciting to be able to combine the two approaches. So I'm very lucky to have to work with Jason, and he's an amazing teacher too. And both of them are just unbelievably intelligent, just like high IQs. Like they just can think, they can just see things that normal people, you know, that can't see. That was something that surprised me, is the guitar players on the top, the ones I've met or the ones I've studied with, how just absolutely intelligent, not necessarily book read, you know. An example, Manuel Barrueco, who doesn't seem to be very book read, but he would say things, like I remember hearing something, I was like, that's actually Plato. And he just kind of thought of it. He just, well, it would be, the, you know, he just off the top of his head, he just kind of thought this was what it would be like, and where I would have to read Plato to get it.
Right.
You know, so it's amazing to think like you just like came up with something that Plato thought of, like without even realizing, you know. So to be able to, and I'm very lucky to be able to study with, you know, such great teachers. I find personally that seeking out the best teacher is absolutely worth it. Some people say, oh, it's a lot of money. You know, they're both very expensive to study with,
sure.
But the results, playing-wise and career-wise, is just absolutely worth it. So.
Yeah, that's so cool. Well, then your students are really lucky, too, because they're getting your distillation
right.
of
Yes,
of
yeah,
Jason
they can get, yeah, I have a much... My rate's a lot less than theirs, but you get the same information.
That's so cool. Well, what have you got next for us?
So this next one is my own arrangement that I'm very excited to play. It's a Celtic harp tune from the 1500s.
Wow.
and it is called either Molly Halfpenny or Haypenny, as mm-hmm. I just discovered. Someone corrected me at one of my gigs, or sometimes called Molly McGaplin.
Hmm.
So I've always loved Celtic harp music.
Yeah.
And I've always wanted to play it. I never had an excuse. One of the gigs I was playing, and they asked me if I could play any, you know, Celtic music or any Irish music. So I was really excited for the chance. So a week later, I had a bunch of sets. I came up with a nice set of music. And this one stuck in. This one was so beautiful that I ended up memorizing it and keeping it permanently in my repertoire.
Wow.
So this one is, again, you know, some of these pieces I'm playing are very physically difficult. This one is just pure beautiful.
Mm.
It's not, I'm not here to show off. It's just one of the more beautiful things I've ever heard. So I'm really happy to get to share something with you guys here. So this is Molly Halfpenny, traditional Celtic tune.
That is definitely a keeper. It's
such
a beautiful melody.
I know.
And there's just something about it. It sounds really Celtic, and it's always been hard to put my finger on what exactly that is, but I don't know if it's the modes or whatever, but they really instantly can tell it's Celtic.
Absolutely. Yeah, and I think it fits nicely on the guitar.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard for me to argue that the guitar is more beautiful than the harp. I'm not going to go there. but I think it works really great on the guitar.
Yeah, it definitely does. And yet you can tell that its roots are with a harp piece as
absolutely.
Well.
Absolutely. I've even used some of the ornaments that I did were actually harp-style ornaments.
Wow.
That you don't do on guitar, but it fits really well, and it's kind of cool to have, you know, to try a new technique.
Yeah, for sure. Well, this is a spooky time. Fall, end of fall, always strikes me as like a spooky time, and you have a kind of a spooky piece that you've
absolutely
brought with us,
yes. So this next piece is based off of a short story by Edgar Allan Poe, called The Fall of the House of Usher. And the piece itself is called The Usher Waltz, written by Nikai Kashkin, a Russian composer, again, still alive. I'm friends with him on Facebook, actually. And he continues to write music to this day. Very clever, you know, music. A lot of it is very, very modern sounding. This one is a little bit more on the tonal side. So a little bit about The Fall of the House of Usher. I don't want you to be scared, but there's a normal guy, main character, who goes to this very creepy house called the Usher House. It's a mansion, and he visits his friend. And his sister, his friend's sister, is kind of sick. And it ends up, they end up thinking that she dies. So they lock her in a tomb, and they lock the metal door.
Wow.
To the tomb. And then they you hear the metal door of the room clanking closed. And what ends up happening is it turns out that she was still alive, and you can hear it clawing at the tomb.
Oh,
and then
no.
Eventually you hear the metal door break open and the metal tomb break open. And she approaches the main character, and he runs away scared. And as he's leaving, the whole entire house collapses in on itself. So all of that is going to take place in the next piece that I'm going to play. A very exciting piece. There's a lot of really cool things. There's a lot of very nasty kind of move, you know, kind of moves that happen too. So if I don't give you the precursor that this is a, you know, based off of a Halloween type story, a lot of people might not understand it. So I typically play this all year round, because this is just every program I have to put this in. It's just so fun.
Yeah, that's
so I think you're going to really enjoy this programmatic piece called The Usher Waltz. Thank you.
Wow. That is really horrifying.
Yes.
I love the sound effects and just the tension there.
Yeah.
Your setup was great because then we knew what was happening.
Yeah, and there's a lot. Yeah, the dark chords and even the tempo 66.
Yeah. It's just, it's so macabre. I mean, you normally think of a waltz as being a pretty straightforward, kind of happy, lovely thing, and yet this is just so dark. And
absolutely.
It must
I know.
Be really fun to play.
It's so much fun to play, yeah.
Wow. Well, Brad, I know you've got one more piece, one more fiery piece. It's not really an encore, but...
okay.
But this Fuoco, or Fire.
Yes.
I'm really looking forward to hearing you play that,
because
that is such an intense piece.
Yes, this is a very exciting... I got to meet Roland Deans before he passed away, the year everyone passed away, the David Bowie and all that, very sad. And he is a goofy guy. So when I met him, he was conducting a guitar orchestra, and he had these sunglasses with little windshield wipers that just kind of wiped. And he kind of looks like Doc from Back to the Future, like, which isn't his fault. So, and he sort of acts like he kind of has that eccentric personality. So he's such a, an eccentric, really goofy, very fun person. And he's contributed so much music to the guitar. I don't even know if I've heard half the music he's written.
Wow.
So this piece, Fuoco, is one of his more famous pieces. He had a heart transplant, and this piece was about his new pacemaker, which was pumping really hard. So I'm very excited to be playing this for you, and I'm very excited to be out in Connecticut playing for you guys tonight. So I hope
it's
you really
been
enjoy.
It's so much fun to have you here.
Yeah, just, thank you.
The guitar is one of those instruments that hearing a recording doesn't do it justice, really. It's so much fun to hear it in person. And so,
absolutely. Awesome.
So it's been great.
I am going to check. This is one where I really need that tempo. So this is Fuoco by Roland Deans. Thank you.
Wow, what an amazing piece. I mean, no wonder you love it. That's been great. Brad, it has been so much fun to have you here. And how can people track you down again, your website?
So my website is bradraumusic.com, bradraumusic.com. I have videos on YouTube. I have music lessons on YouTube if you want to learn a couple pointers from me. Spotify, iTunes, any platform, I'm there.
All right, you're everywhere.
Facebook, if you want to be friends with me on Facebook, feel free to contact me and say hello. Fantastic. Love to hear from you.
Fantastic. Well, thanks again so much for making the trip up here. It's really, really been fun.
Yeah, thank you. It's been a lot of fun. Thanks.